I want you to turn again to page 96, and let me give you, I'm going to give you a little bit more review, because I believe that this is very crucial in the Old Testament in knowing what happened with Israel and how the kingdom started off as a unified kingdom and then ended up splitting. So that's what we've been talking about the past couple of weeks. Last week was shorter too because of our regular business meeting, and tonight will be a tad shorter. So on that chart on page 96, remember that there was a split in the kingdom in about the year 931 BC. So this is 930 years before your New Testament begins when this happens. What you ended up with in that split is a northern part of the land of Israel and a southern part or southern kingdom of the land of Israel. In your Bible, I said this last week, the northern part of Israel maintained the name of Israel. Almost every time in the Old Testament, after the split, anytime a prophet or someone refers to Israel, they're talking about the northern half once the split occurred in 931 BC. The southern portion of the land of Israel took the name of the prominent tribe. Remember, there's 12 tribes of Israel. It takes the name of the prominent tribe of that southern portion, and that was the tribe of Judah. So if you remember, you've got Judah and Benjamin are the only two tribes in the south. It's just two of those. And then 10 tribes are together in the north. And I'm just going to say again, you've got to keep this, you've got to keep this straight in your head to understand the rest of the Old Testament and the prophets and how they fit into the story of Scripture. So it can be confusing if you don't know about this and what happened. And in my little opinion, the book really didn't explain that a whole lot. It just starts off with a northern and southern kingdom. So after this split, now the northern part of Israel has a series of kings, and the southern part of Israel, called Judah, has a series of kings. And that's what we went over last Wednesday night in your chart on page 96, and then the top of 97. So let me stop there in case there is any question or anything you want to add about that chart or all these kings or anything about that before trying to finish up this lesson. All right, so on the back, we're on page 97. When you look at the kings, when you read through 1 Kings and 2 Kings and into Chronicles, you're going to read about all these kings. You'll read about what happened in their lives. A lot of times they are identified by how many years they reigned as king. I think especially for Judah, they almost in every case give the king's mother's name, which just a little unique thing they do. But out of all these kings in that paragraph under the chart on page 97, out of all those kings, and I didn't count how many it is, I probably should have. Let me do that real quick. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 22, 4, 6, 8, 32, 34, 6, 8, about 39 generally of both kingdoms. Out of all 39, and this is really a sad testimony. Out of all 39, only three of those kings actually led Israel or Judah to a time of revival and turning back to God. Okay, so that's why under that chart, it says there that there were three kings of Judah. Now, notice specifically of Judah. It's not from the kings of Israel, but in Judah. So out of the kings of Judah, there were three in particular that brought revival and led the people to turn from idols to worship God. And they say, find out who they are, read the passages. And if you go back in your chart, you can put an R for revival beside those, but you can also just put them in the blanks right here. And they use the references from Chronicles for these kings. But I would say, if you're going to name your child after a king of Israel, I would choose Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, or Josiah. The rest of them, it wouldn't be worth the piece of paper their names written on. Okay? So out of all of these kings, there were only three that I would say truly feared. I'm going to say that they truly feared God, but only three that God used to bring the people back to himself in revival. So Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah, and each of them has a pretty lengthy narrative with their kingship because of how they tried to get the people to turn back to God. Now, another thing I think is important, and I'm going to show you a map. If you've got now a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom, it only makes sense that each half of the kingdom will now have a capital city. So the part under that, if you look up those references and you read through the story, Judah maintained their capital in Jerusalem, which is what it would have been when they were a unified kingdom. That's where David reigned from, Solomon reigned from, Rehoboam before the split. So Judah has Jerusalem as their kingdom or capital. Israel, with one of their kings, ends up purchasing some land, and the city of Samaria, he kind of makes that a home base for his reign. And so then Samaria becomes the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. Now, again, I wish, what would the dating be? This is 20, I'm going to say 20 to 25 years ago. I so wish someone had told me this. Because when I read through the Old Testament, a lot of times you'll find a reference to Samaria with the kings. I'm like, all right, why is it so much reference to Samaria? I didn't understand any of this. And it helps so much now when you read through this with a prophet or whoever. When they talk about Samaria, sometimes the city of Samaria itself represents the entire northern kingdom of Israel because it was a capital. Jerusalem can represent the entire southern kingdom of Judah because it was a capital. So I think that's important as you try to understand and fit things together with the rest of the Old Testament. So let me put the map up here I've been referencing now. It feels like for about 6 weeks I've been referencing the map, but I think it's only been about three. And let me get my very safe pointer designed for TV screens. So if you hit it too hard, it'll crack it. You know, I wouldn't want to use a soft, you know, felt tip baton, nothing like that. Let's use a big, thick, you know, broomstick with a metal piece hanging on the end of it. Anyway, I know, it's crazy, Andy. So let me try to explain where we is at this point. So we started in the book of Exodus down here in Egypt, and they cross the Red Sea. God told them, they get up to Kadesh Barnea, and God told them to go into the land. Spy the land, we'll give you all this land. And from Kadesh Barnea, remember, out of 12 tribes, only two came back and said, we can take the land. The other 10 were scared to death. They're like, we're grasshoppers in their sight. They're going to crush us, swallow us up. There's no way we can take the land. So because of that, the book of Numbers says they wandered for 40 years in this wilderness until all that generation died off. I will estimate over 600,000 funerals in 40 years' time because of that wandering and their choosing not to obey God at Kadesh Barnea to go into the land. So they wander around. They've got the tabernacle they build as they move about. And after 40 years, they now start their march up this side of the Dead Sea. They cross through these areas, and they end up camped out just east of the Jordan River across from Jericho. At that point, you now get into the story of Joshua, because Joshua's going to lead the people across the river and into Jericho, and that is the very first city they conquer. So they go into the promised land. It's a divide and conquer technique. They divide the land, conquer the southern kings, conquer the northern kings, and now they're in the land. So they get into the land. We've got a bunch of judges that rise up for like 350 years. After that point, they decide, we want a king. We want to be like all the other nations around us. So they want a king. They get the king, Saul, David, Solomon.
And after Solomon's death, remember that there is a disagreement between his son Rehoboam and a dude named Jeroboam. They end up with a split, divided kingdom. This is now the divided kingdom. It used to be one whole kingdom of Israel. Now it's a divided kingdom. So the northern part of the kingdom, the northern part of the kingdom is Israel. The southern part of the kingdom is Judah. And that's where we are. The capital of Israel is Samaria. And the capital of Judah is Jerusalem. Now you remember when Jeroboam looked up here and realized he's got the northern part of the kingdom, first king of Israel, northern, and Jerusalem's where they worship. Jeroboam was scared. If these people leave my land and go down here to Jerusalem to worship, they may desert me, end up joining with the tribe of Judah and Benjamin, and I'll lose my kingdom. So remember what Jeroboam decided to do. He said, I'm going to build two golden calves. He put one in Dan. He says he built a sanctuary. And he put one in Bethel. Now remember I told you? He went to the northern part of the kingdom and the southern part of the kingdom. Here's what Jeroboam was trying to do. Wherever you live in my kingdom, there is never an excuse for you to go all the way down to Judah and to worship in Jerusalem. So I'm going to put a calf here in Dan. I'll put one in Bethel. For all y'all, plural you, for all y'all that live south of this area, you can easily go to Bethel. And for all y'all that live north about this area, you can go up to Dan and everybody's happy, happy, happy. Now the problem is that's idolatry. Golden calves. That is where we are now in the story. A divided kingdom. The north is called Israel, capital of Samaria. The south is called Judah, capital there in Jerusalem. Every prophet that arises, all these kings are reigning in north and south, and the prophets that arise will be preaching to either people of the southern kingdom of Judah or the northern kingdom of Israel. So that's what's happened at this point with all these kings, that chart in your book that lists all the kings. Out of all those kings, only three brought revival to the southern kingdom of Judah. You've got Jerusalem as a capital of Judah, Samaria, capital of Israel. And the last statement or blank in that area, and you probably could have figured this out before I even said it. What was the sin that led to, it's going to lead to a lot of bad stuff that's going to happen. But the sin now that they're primarily guilty of is worshiping idols. Now it starts in the northern kingdom of Israel because we've got Dan up there with a calf. We've got Bethel down here with a calf. It is pure idolatry. Because of that, there's going to be a time of, I'm going to say, intense judgment from God upon the people. And you'll see that in the next, I don't know, 3-4 lessons, something like that. So let me point out one more thing about this, and then I'll be done with this lesson. So if you go back and look at your chart, they mention this, let me emphasize it. Out of all the kings of the northern kingdom of Israel, how many were faithful, good kings? Zero. Not a single one. Out of all the kings of the southern kingdom, you can go back where those little stars are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So out of all the kings of the southern kingdom, 8 were good, faithful kings. And out of all the kings of the northern kingdom, they were all rascals. Not a single God-fearing king in the northern kingdom. Out of those 8, 3 in particular led times of revival. And that's where your Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah fit in. So tell me what's like really confusing at this point. Bunch of kings, big Hebrew names, not many good kings, didn't trust God, but there were a few.
but only in the southern part of the kingdom of Judah. All right, what's on your mind, your heart, tickling your toes? Hopefully that's not too confusing then. So let me get you to look at the very last question on the bottom of that page. I think there's a little principle here that I wanted to point out. It asks the question, why do you think it was so hard for the kings who did right, which was only 8 of them, why was it so hard to turn the hearts of the entire nation back to God? If you look back at your chart, you've got Asa and Jehoshaphat, consecutive kings that were trying to do good. You've got Joash, Amaziah, Azariah. Okay, 4 kings in a row for a while that did good. But what you notice is there's no consistent pattern. So after Hezekiah is a really good king, brings revival, his son Manasseh was one of the most evil kings Judah ever had. So it's hard to even find a pattern. So the question is, why do you think it was so hard for a good king to really make a lasting change? And I think about it like this, and it helps me. So if you think about, we as a Baptist church have chosen to cooperate with what's called the Southern Baptist Convention. There's about 47,000 or so Southern Baptist churches in the United States of America. The convention had a horrible leftward unbiblical drift in the 70s and 80s. And in the 1990s, there were a few folks who tried to make a stand to turn the convention back to the Bible. And they did. It was a miracle, honestly, a miracle. You never see that kind of change when it starts with an unbiblical drift. So one of the main guys who turned, or really God used to turn this thing back to Scripture, he uses an analogy that I think applies to why it's so hard for a good king to really make a big change in the kingdom with Judah. So he said there's a difference in turning an aircraft carrier compared to turning a canoe. The larger the entity is, the slower it must turn to reverse course. That makes sense? So he said, like this big Southern Baptist Convention of 40-some thousand churches, 15 million members, 6 seminaries and all that stuff. Man, you're talking about a mammoth group of people. And you think about how an aircraft carrier just gradually starts to make that turn. And it takes a long time, but eventually it goes back the way it should go. Now, if you're in a canoe, you don't flip out first. If you're in a canoe, you know, you can kind of hit the paddle and do a turn and you can go a different direction. So if you think about with Israel's kings, idolatry is so embedded in that culture. So many kings are pushing idolatry that even when you've got a good king trying to steer the people in the right direction, this is not a canoe. You're trying to turn a nation of people and get them to go in an opposite direction from their idolatry. And it's a very, very slow turn. Here's what I think. I think when Hezekiah, Josiah, Jehoshaphat, whoever, I think when they were trying to start making that turn, it did start the turn. But man, but before their lifetime is over, somebody else arises, and guess what they do? Right back where they were. So it's really hard to see a significant impact if you don't have a lengthy amount of time for something that massive with these people. So that is my little thought about that question of why it was so hard for them. Now, it's also hard, I think, because just as we today deal with a radical secular culture, it would have been the same back then with their idolatry, not as many people trusting in the God of Israel. And that really works against you when you're trying to do what's right and trying to take a stand for what's right. So those are my little thoughts. So does anybody have anything you want to add to that or
share, elaborate? What'd you say, Delmas?
I need cake.
Well, bless your heart. Huh? That's funny. So let me tell you where we're headed. This is so important.
like, I'm going to say this may be the most important section or lesson or whatever in this book, just to understand the split and what's going to happen now with all these kings. What happens in the midst of these kings is, I've mentioned this several times, God now raises up prophets. When they turn away from truth and turn away from God's ways, His calling and purpose was then to raise up these preachers, basically, who would preach to the people and try to get them to turn from their wicked ways and come back to Him. So the next lesson in your book, which I'm going to go ahead and start. I think I still got a few little minutes here. The next lesson in the book here, they entitle this God's Messengers. Okay, so here's where we are. We got a whole list of kings. The majority of the kings are leading people into idolatry. And so God now raises up messengers, some preachers, and they're called prophets in the Old Testament. And their task is to try to convince the people, of course, with the power of God, to try to convince the people to let go of their idols and turn back to Him. So let me start this lesson. And then I will stop, and I truly, if Greg doesn't mind, I mean, I know I kind of forced it on him, but if he doesn't mind, I'd love it if he would kind of lead prayer requests and take and spend some time praying for those before head over. But let me start this section on page 99. They call it God's Messengers, and they start off trying to get you to compare a prophet of the Old Testament to an ambassador in our day. So they ask and answer the question, what does an ambassador do? And they use this in the context of our country and say that the president of the United States sends ambassadors to other countries because he cannot go himself. Okay, so that ambassador represents our interests as a nation when he or she travels to a different country. So the U.S. ambassador to France, for example, represents our president and our country to the French government and speaks for our government. Now, here's what they do. If you think about an ambassador doing that on behalf of this country, a prophet, then it says, similarly, is one who speaks in the place of another. God's prophets spoke to the people for God. Now, remember my little simple way of thinking about a priest and prophet. A priest kind of stands here and communicates from God or from the people to God, kind of bridging that gap. Now, a prophet stands here and speaks now from God to the people. So the prophets serve as kind of an ambassador of heaven to give God's message of truth to the people when they turn away to idolatry. So these prophets are like ambassadors. It says a prophet did not inherit the office as a priest or king did. Rather, God appointed the prophet, so they were called by God, and the Holy Spirit empowered that prophet. During the divided kingdom, okay, they're talking about now the northern part of Israel, southern kingdom of Judah. During the divided kingdom, prophets preached mostly to the kings. Why is that? Because so many of them were leading the people astray. They warned three things. They warned against idolatry. They predicted judgment is coming. So if you want to jokingly say the point of their message was kind of turn or burn type thing, but this was their task. They warn against idolatry, they predict judgment, and they also advise the kings on important decisions they had to make. That was a job of a prophet. Now let me say a couple of things about a prophet. Sometimes we get the idea that a prophet's primary task was to foretell the future. That's not a prophet's primary task. Sometimes a prophet did speak of things in the future, but a prophet's primary task was to communicate the message of God today for the people today. So if you want to kind of compare it today, the Old Testament prophet was kind of what we would call today a preacher or evangelist. Okay, that was their task, to give the message of God's truth to a wayward people. That's what the prophet did. Sometimes offering advice to the king. But the point is, that prophet was a spokesperson for God, speaking on behalf of God to the people. Priest is down here speaking on behalf of the people to God. Okay, so that was a prophet's job. Not to be a fortune teller. Not to be a foretelling the future primarily. The task was to give the message of God to the people. Now there are two primary prophets during this time in Israel's history, and their messages and lives are recorded in the book of 2 Kings. And we're not going to go over these, we don't have time, but I'm going to give you the name. Page 99, their first one is Elijah, you've probably heard of. And then on page 100, the second one is Elisha. And when you read through all of these kings and this time in Israel's history, these are the two primary prophets that God uses to speak to the kings and give the message. Now, other prophets are coming. We've got our Isaiah and our Jeremiah and Micah. All these prophets are coming. We're going to talk about those. But right now, in this time of their history, it's Elijah and then Elisha. And what I'm going to do starting next week is we're going to talk about a little summary of a significant event in Elijah's life and ministry. And I'm going to give you a handout for Elisha and all the miracles that God worked through him. And then they list on page 100 and 101 some other prophets that were, I'm going to say, kind of a lower key, but other prophets during this time that spoke to the kings and the people.